Welcome back to MWBE Times, the podcast that helps small businesses gain access and connect through MWBE certifications. The purpose of the podcast is to provide knowledge and resources through interviews with subject matter experts, as well as educational sessions. Whether you're a small business owner, a corporate firm, or a government agency, you'll find helpful information about how to implement successful supplier diversity and procurement initiatives. Hello, audience, and thank you for joining us for another episode of MWBE Times. Today, we are super excited because we get to speak to Arnold Jolivet, Manager of Supplier Diversity for the University of Maryland in Baltimore. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Angelina, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Let's get started. I'm just going to launch right in and ask you some questions. So, number one, let's start with a little bit about you. Tell us about your role as the Manager of Supplier Diversity, University of Maryland. And I always love to find out a little history about the interviewee specifically. What inspired you to pursue this career in supplier diversity?
So, I actually grew up in this industry, being around it. My father was heavily involved in advocacy for minority businesses. He was one of the original members of what was then the Maryland Minority Contractors Association back in the late 70s, early 80s. And he continued that advocacy for well over 30 years until he passed in 2014 in fighting and advocating for small minority businesses. And the more I tried to get away from it, the harder I was drawn back into it. So I had a chance to see up close the importance of a supplier diversity program. And I was also able to see a lot of late nights, a lot of early mornings, a lot of fighting for what was right with the so-called powers that be. And it's inspired me to be able to do my part in making sure that that torch is carried on and move forward.
Love that. So essentially, the baton was passed on to you. So there's legacy there.
Absolutely.
So what is it that you currently do in your role?
With the supplier diversity program, we deal with the contracts or the procurement process for all of the schools within the university. The University of Maryland Baltimore is actually the graduate arm of the university, which includes the law school, the medical school, the dental school, the School of Social Work, School of Pharmacy, as well as the School of Nursing. So there's so much opportunity for small businesses to be able to participate, not just on what your traditional projects are as far as construction, but really in the day-to-day services that are procured by the university. And so our job is to make sure that the minority business community is well aware of those opportunities, as well as internally educating what they call end users or the staff about the importance of supplier diversity and how it makes for a better product for everyone. So that's the main job in dealing with compliance. There's a lot of reporting that takes place both on the monthly, quarterly, and annual basis to the governor's office of small business, as well as outreach to the business community as well, letting them know what opportunities are available.
Yeah, I must imagine, right? I know here, right, with some of my clients and working with primes and government, sometimes it's hard to convince them to take on new MWBE certified businesses, right? New vendors, because they're just so used to using the same one. I understand the why, right? They've been consistent. They're on time. They're on budget. So I'm wondering if that's a hurdle that you have to overcome.
It is a hurdle. And I think, like you said, it's human nature to do business or go with who you're familiar with. But the whole purpose of the program is to be able to foster competition, right? That's why we have the competitive bid process. And I think when the more competition that you have, the more inclusive you are of other companies, those that you're familiar with and those that you aren't familiar with, I think it makes those companies that were already doing business, it keeps them sharp and makes sure that they are providing the best services. Even as a company, I've seen companies that were getting contracts over and over again. I've seen them even get complacent. Sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's unintentional. As far as the goods and services that they're providing, because they know that regardless of what's going to happen, once that contract expires, it's going to get renewed. So there really isn't as much motivation for them to be able to do their best or to put their best effort forward. But when they know or they see that there's competition, that it's opened up to everyone, then I think that makes for better competition, which in turn makes a better product, it makes for better pricing, and it's usually a win-win for everyone.
That is a great point. I really never saw competitive bidding can be sometimes difficult, especially for smaller businesses, right, that maybe don't have the economies of scale that a bigger company would have when it comes to pricing. But it does kind of level the playing field from that standpoint, right, because everybody's competing and you keep on your toes. So that's a good point.
And I think also a lot of times we hear the term lowest bidder, but it's not always the lowest bid that wins. It's the lowest and most responsive bidder, right? So if your bid is just low, but you're not checking off the boxes that are in the RFP, then you're low, but you're not the most responsive. You know, some practices years ago where a company would be the lowest bidder intentionally, and then they would try to hit the organization or the agency over the head with change orders in order to be able to make up the difference, right? And so those practices have kind of gone the way of the dinosaur because it's just not a way to do good business. There have been situations where companies have been the lowest bidder and thought that they were going to enforce change orders during the course of the contract, and they weren't able to do so. And companies suffered from it, and they learned the lesson that for a lot of government agencies or non-government agencies, that's not something that's going to be tolerated. Of course, you're going to have change orders, legitimate change orders, but to do it as a way to try to win business is not the way to go.
That is a wonderful best practice right there. And that's great to know that it's really not just pricing, right? They still have to work on the rest of the proposal, submit like, you know, a really strong document. But at the same time, you know, when they're underpricing just to be able to get the contracts, that's great. How does the University of Maryland, and specifically the Supplier Diversity Program, how does it support and promote inclusion when it comes to the procurement process from WBEs?
Sure, absolutely. So each contract has a minority business goal or an MBE goal, WBE goal. We also have something called the Small Business Reserve Program as well. And so we have what's called a procurement review group. The task for the procurement review group is to look at the elements of a particular contract to see where minority participation can be achieved and to be able to find the different NAICS codes or areas where that can be established and to be able to set the goal accordingly. We have contracts where we even have MBE firms that are prime contractor, right? We may have a contract where a goal may be 30%, 35%, or you may have a contract that may only have 5% participation based on the available firms in our database that are certified through the Maryland Department of Transportation to do the work. So it really just depends project by project, but we really try to do our due diligence and our homework on the front end to make sure that goal is correctly established.
Well, that's so interesting. Every state is different, right? Some have hard set-asides. Some are aspirational in nature, but you actually analyze the businesses that are certified within your system. And then based on that, you kind of determine then what the percentages are for each project. That's interesting. I've never heard of that before. What are some of the key initiatives that you have, right? Your department implements to, I guess, help MWBEs participate or help them even get contracts, at least maybe increase participation?
The main thing is awareness. You know, I was always taught that a business with no sign is a sign of no business. Right. So if you are a business and you don't have your sign out for those university or other agencies and entities to know what it is that you do, it's going to be very challenging. I would say if you had to use a sports analogy, to be able to have a ticket to be able to get into the game is you need to make sure that all your ducks are in a row as far as your business, that you're certified. Being certified makes you more attractive to a state entity or a university entity because, quite honestly, the state agency will receive credit towards their goal by using you. Doesn't mean that you can't bid on a project. Doesn't mean you can't participate if you're not certified. But if you have the capability to get certified as a minority business enterprise and you're looking to do business, why not get that certification that at least puts you in the game and makes your firm more attractive to be able to participate in that procurement process? So the main thing we like to do is make sure that we're reaching out to companies through outreach events, both in person and virtually. There are a lot of times where a company may not be aware of an opportunity that exists in procurement. So there's something called eMaryland Marketplace, where they can go on and see the different opportunities that are available all throughout the state, not just with us, but through any state agency, through any state entity. They're able to see what opportunities exist from your small projects, from a $50,000 contract all the way up to, you know, $50 million. There's a wide range of procurement that's available. So that's the main thing, is really try to be an ambassador in letting those companies know what's available, not just currently, but what's going to be coming down the pike within the next 6 to 12 months as well. So they may not have the capacity now, but by the time that contract comes out, they can either build capacity or potentially joint venture with another company to make sure they're in the right position to be able to win.
Contract opportunities are put on that kind of state website, right?
Yes.
Do you guys have your own kind of portal or website where you post your opportunities?
So that portal, Email Marketplace, covers not just us, but all the different state entities as well. So ours are listed on there. We do have a website as well, which is more so informational about the department and in the office. But as far as looking for the actual procurement opportunities for the university, they can find those on there as well.
Honestly, that's better, right? And that's more efficient and effective. You know, it's kind of inefficient or unproductive when you have so many different websites that you have to look at to find opportunities, where if it's all centralized, you know, okay, this is where I'm going, this is where I'll find out, right? So it definitely alleviates the need to kind of keep track and keep visiting different websites.
We have one central place where if you are a marketing firm and you put in search engine marketing and all the marketing contracts come up for all the agencies and entities within the state, it's very user-friendly. You know, I always tell people, it's hard to say that there aren't opportunities available where you can literally go on any time of the day to see what's available and kind of make your plan as to, you know, where you want to target as far as trying to do business.
You know, you mentioned that University of Maryland, there's a lot of graduate programs, and it seems like a lot of them are in the medical industry, right? Are there particular industries that this group of universities mostly focuses on? Is it goods? Is it services? And within services, is it mostly certain types of industries, or is it the gamut, IT and marketing and construction, et cetera?
It's really so much of everything, because the medical school, the dental school, of course, you have opportunities for medical supply delivery. The university spends tens of thousands of dollars on tests as far as medical tests are concerned. So you're talking about the delivery of cadavers or animals that are being tested safely and all those things. But you also have your low-hanging fruit. So that can also include office supplies. That also includes catering opportunities. It also includes, you know, janitorial opportunities. It includes landscaping, snow removal, you name it, plumbing, electrical. You know, all those services are used within the university as far as day-to-day IT services, IT consulting, temporary staffing. You know, all of those things are opportunities that can be used by a company where you can really navigate to figure out, you know, where you want to position yourself. We even had companies that may have started out, they were just doing regular deliveries, and they are looking to grow their capacity where they're going from just doing regular deliveries as far as packages to moving up to doing medical supply delivery. So that would be in the logistics field. So there's so many opportunities and ways that you can decide to take it that I always recommend to business owners is, hey, get in where you can, go after the low-hanging fruit. I meet with people every single day, and, you know, someone who may not ever had a contract before with the state say, well, Arnold, tell me how to get $1 million contract, right? Well, how about if we start out getting you a $10,000 contract and then you move up and you get, you know, a $25,000, a $50,000, and you grow like that instead of trying to take on something more than you may be able to handle or really not knowing how the system works. The worst thing that you can do as a business owner is be able to overpromise and underdeliver. So we always like to be able to grow those companies because they have a proven track record. And it's just like anything, you build that relationship.
For sure. I know here, I think I say this during every every episode, that just because you get a certification, right, doesn't automatically mean that you're going to get a contract. You have to work at establish relationships. And yes, you know, the goal eventually is one day for you to make the million or the multi-million dollar, kind of get that kind of contract. But yeah, you have to start somewhere. And it's like any relationship, right? You have to start off slow, you have to prove yourself, and then you grow, even able to expand through referrals and through recommendations, right? But you have to start somewhere and you have to get your foot in the door And you have to work it, right? That's why you have to go to expos, in-person, virtual, you have to email, you have to do your due diligence, right? You have to go online. It's work. It's not a free pass, right? You still have to be a great company that's responsible with great customer service and great pricing, et cetera. It's interesting how sometimes they just think it's going to be like a pill that you drink and then all your problems are going to be solved. No, you definitely right. have to work it, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Can you share some success stories or achievements of some MWBEs, right, that kind of came in and were really able to grow their business and how they went about doing that?
Absolutely. There is a minority electrical firm that started out really just kind of doing some small electrical panel work within the university, $1,000 here, $1,000 there, but really did great work. The crew showed up on time. They did everything that they said they were going to do. All the paperwork was immaculate. I really just did everything, went above and beyond what they were asked. And so as they continued to grow, they started to go to a lot of the outreach events, go to some of the contract showings or the pre-bid meetings. And I'll just kind of sidebar here for a second. One thing I always tell business owners is whether you feel like you're going to bid on a project or not, especially this was pre-COVID when you had in-person pre-bid meetings, it was always good to go to the pre-bid meeting. Because at the pre-bid meeting, you got a chance to see who the prime contractors were. You also had a chance to see who your competition was from the other subcontractors that may be there as well. And you also had a chance to build relationships with those companies. And so one great thing on email and marketplace is they actually post the pre-bid meeting, the sign-in sheets that has the name, phone number, email, website of all the people that participated. So it's a great way to try to establish those contacts. So that's what this company did. They attended those meetings. They went to those sessions. They were very teachable and coachable as far as what we were suggesting for them to do. And over the past, I would say 5 years, they've done, you know, well over $10 million or so in projects for us dealing with electrical work as subcontractors on some of our major construction projects. So it's really been a testament as to the hard work of the owners and also being patient and looking at it as a long-term process, long-term relationship, as opposed to just trying to make some quick money.
You mentioned so many wonderful nuggets, but I think the four that I want to reiterate, because I think they're definitely worth mentioning. Number one, the documentation and the reporting and the fact that it's immaculate, right? The people don't understand that. You know, this is reimbursable. So you need good relationships, cash in the bank, right? Or have access to financing, right? But in order for you to get paid, you need great reporting. You need to submit documentation with receipts, et cetera, to get paid. So number one, yes, the fact that they need immaculate paperwork. Number two, that they're teachable. That's another great point, right? Because especially in the beginning, right, they might not understand all the requirements, compliance, you know, even hours that they can come in and out of the building, the days of the week, even the materials that are required. Like, these are things that sometimes are very specific to projects. So the fact that we're willing to be teachable and learn and grow is amazing, right? I always say, like, it's always like my little nugget. Pre-bids are like a secret weapon, because you're right. So whether you're trying to meet primes and be a sub under the prime, whether you're trying to meet other subs, whether they're competition or maybe you could partner with them on other opportunities, whether you're meeting the people that are making the decision, there's a host of reasons why participating in these pre-bid meetings are just key for learning, for expanding, for relationships. So I'm always pushing the pre-bid meeting. And finally, the fact that you're seeing this long term. So many times, right, people think of a job as a one-time situation and they don't do a good job. They exceed the budget. They don't do their paperwork well. They have horrible customer service. And then they wonder why they don't get called back to continue with the contract, right? You definitely need to see this as long term, especially with the example that you just gave. This was a company that, you know, like, great paperwork, teachable, learned everything. And they started off small and look, they're now millions, right? But that didn't happen overnight. You have to be patient, and it is a long-term game when it comes to government and corporate, right? So you really need to see this as a long-term strategy, not a short-term fix, for sure.
Absolutely.
My final question, what advice would you give to MWBEs interested in doing business with the University of Maryland in Baltimore?
First, I would just make sure that, like we talked about before, make sure that you have everything in place that you need as far as your corporate structure. I can't tell you how many times I've met with people. They have their business. They want to get started. They have the expertise, have the personal resume. They may not have the business resume, but they have the personal resume as far as work that they may have done, whether it be working for another company or something like that. And then when you want to meet with them and ask them to provide you the additional documentation that they have as far as the insurances are concerned, or if it requires a certain type of license for the work that they're looking to do. And sometimes there may be one or two things missing, right? And so I think that if you do your homework on the front end, as far as understanding what it is that you're getting started with and what's required, that's the one great thing that is about the certification program. You already know that if a company is certified, that there's a certain level of competency that they have to have, at least to have the certification. So once we go beyond that, that's a whole nother thing. But you know that they at least had to have certain ducks in a row in order to be able to put themselves, you know, in that market. So the first thing I would do is just to make sure, you know, I learned a long time ago, how you do anything is how you do everything. So make sure that if you start out right, you'll end up right. So make sure that you start out, you really want to begin with the end in mind. If you start your company and you have in your mindset that you are running a multi-million dollar business, you have to act like you have a multi-million dollar business where you may only have $500 in the bank, right? Or $1,000 in the bank. If you have the desire for that company to be at that level, whether it be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the line, you want to make sure, just like if you're taking care of a child, you want to make sure that you are feeding that child properly. You want to make sure that it has the proper nutrients. You can't skip any of the steps. You can't go from 1 to 100. You have to make sure that you hit all of the steps. So my recommendation for any business owner, whether you're doing business with a state entity, whether you're doing business with private, doesn't matter. Don't skip the steps. It's very tempting because being an entrepreneur, and I've done it, I've been an entrepreneur. Being an entrepreneur is not easy. There's going to be long nights, countless nights. There'll be times where you may have to make payroll or keep the lights on where you might not even get your full pay, right? So sometimes it's tempting to me to be able to want to think about skipping stuff, but don't do it. Because in the long run, the only thing it's going to do is hurt you, and it's going to put you back further than where you originally are right now. So my main thing is make sure that you don't skip any of the steps. Make sure that you are surrounding yourself with other people who have similar goals, dreams, and aspirations that you may have. They may not be in the same industry, but there are all kinds of associations, networks out there with like-minded people that you're going to need to pour into you when you go through this entrepreneur journey. Make sure that for yourself, if you are a business owner, make sure you have your own personal development plan. Set up your own personal development plan with what you're reading, what you're listening to. Plug into podcasts such as yours where they can feed themselves information. Because like I said before, it can get very discouraging. There's going to be some great days, but there can be some discouraging days. And there are more businesses that have failed than have succeeded. I think making sure that you do that and understand that this is a long-term process. It's not a short-term gain. And I think by doing so and putting in that effort, I think that they'll be okay.
I agree with everything you said. I think the two main takeaways, yeah, for sure, make sure that you're right, meaning that you have your insurance, you have your bonding, that you have your website, that you have your LinkedIn, that you're doing your social, that you have your logo and your cover letter, that you're professional in nature, right? Because government, corporate, you're going to do the due diligence, right? You're going to look to see that this company is legitimate, right? Regardless of whether they're certified or not, right?
Sure.
So are they registered with the state? Do they have all of their documents? Like I said, the insurance piece of it. So for sure, I think, yes, it, you know, you need to be right, so to speak, right? And then the other part, the development, definitely the personal, right? Yes, the continuous education and enlightening yourself, developing yourself with books and podcasts. But I also think that developing your business, meaning look at, you know, how technology has just transformed business from 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even a couple of months ago. I didn't hear about AI, ChatGPT, until last June, right? And then it was just like it exploded everywhere. Whether positive or negative, it is definitely having an effect on all industries, right? So it is important for companies to keep up to speed with the latest technologies, the latest materials, because you don't want to be kept, you know, in the past. You want to change, right? You want to be able to pivot, be flexible enough to pivot and know that you have to pivot and you may have to change your business model with the changes that are happening to society. So for sure, I think that development one, whether it's personal and business, I think those are key for sure.
It is. Yep, you nailed it.
One last question, and this is actually a bonus question. Has AI impacted the way in which the university, you supply diversity, does business? I'll give you an example, right? So I've participated on webinars where they've had AI professionals come and show how you could use AI to write certain parts of RFPs, to write capability statements, to even look for opportunities, right? You know, obviously what I just said, that it's great because it helps small businesses from a resource and time standpoint. This morning, I was talking to my sister and she said how she was listening to a corporate recruiter and how corporate recruiters are now looking to see if your resume was written by AI and actually ding you for it. So, you know, I feel sorry, right? Because no matter what we do, you know, we're like, we try to use AI as help and to further us along, but at, on some level, you know, it could actually harm us. So curious if at this point, AI is being used in your determination of if it's writing RFPs, and are there adverse effects to using AI at this point when it comes to responding to bids?
I personally have not found AI to be a detriment. With a lot of the work that we do for response or for a bid proposal, AI could be used for certain parts. There's so much technical information that is required as well, as far as pricing and things like that. It would really be challenging because you could have the greatest AI in the world, but at the end of the day, you still have to be able to do the work and you still have to be the backup. What it is that the AI is putting forth. So we haven't found that as of yet, you know, on our end, as far as the procurement process, not to say it wouldn't one day be an issue, but I think if the technology, if used properly alongside that competency, I think it could be a plus. But just like anything, you know, you can have something that's designed for good and folks are going to find a way to try to, you know, twist it and use it another way. But as of right now, we haven't seen that.
Wonderful. Well, those are all the questions I have, Arnold. Thank you so, so much for being on the podcast. This is amazing information, especially all of your nuggets with best practices and recommendations. I love those. Those are amazing. And I really appreciate you coming on the show, talking to us a little bit about your background and how, you know, you as manager of the Supplier Diversity Program at the University of Maryland in Baltimore, how, you know, your projects, your initiatives, and how you really help MWBE. So we're really grateful for your time. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, Angelia, thank you so much for your time. I want to also congratulate you and appreciate you for all the wonderful work that you and your podcast do and your team. I look forward to watching many more of the podcasts to come in the future.
Thank you again. Thanks for tuning in. Stay connected and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at MWBE Times. And visit our website at www.amblin.nyc. Till next time, let's access and connect.